on air, online, on Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. You try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth. And I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick out the soul. Pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole. Gonna lose control tonight. What do you want?
Welcome to your Thursday morning. Kind of gloomy out there, rainy. And welcome to the show, whether you're watching us this morning on Rogers Television or listening to us on 570 News. We're certainly glad you're here, however you got here today. So, okay, lots to do. I think this is going to be a great day. It is Jersey Day, so I hope that you were able to dig some of them out, or maybe they're hanging right in your closet, and get your kids wearing those as we are wearing our jerseys for Humboldt and the Broncos. Today, we'll talk about that coming up at 9:15. It's just been, an unimaginable tragedy. One of those things that happens, and I don't know about you guys, but it's taken days for my brain to kind of, like, I keep thinking things. Like, I just kind of keep thinking new things. Like, it occurred to me, I guess, a couple days ago that we know the hierarchy in hockey. We know that most of the rookies sit at the front of the bus. You know, you kind of hear tidbits of stories and stuff. And so as it unfolds and as you process and deal, and you kind of get closer to the families and to the cities and to the city and to the situation, I guess the town of Humboldt, we should say. I don't know. It's this weird kind of dance, isn't it? Because you feel closer to Humboldt. I mean, I didn't know anything about that town in Saskatchewan beforehand. And you also have these amazing, like, I mean, that GoFundMe account is just incredible. It's astonishing how much money has been raised and how quickly it's happened. I mean, it's remarkable. And this sticks out for Humboldt. Anyway, we're going to talk about all that coming up at 9:15. We're going to talk about some of the hockey that happened last night, too, because, I mean, we are a hockey country. And I got to tell you, watching Sidney Crosby hit the puck into the net mid-air like he was Jose Bautista. Did you guys see that? It was incredible. It was incredible. And as we get set for big nights of hockey tonight as well, with the Leafs and the Bruins and, of course, our Kitchener Rangers, the game continues to be played. So we'll talk about that as well. We're going to talk about how to help overdose victims. The Ontario government's going to make a controversial change in the fight against opioid overdoses by asking bystanders to give mouth-to-mouth to victims. This is stirring some debate in the medical community because there is a question as to whether rescue breathing helps or harms overdose victims. Are you ready to... How is your mouth-to-mouth skill? I kind of am ashamed of myself that actually I think the last time I took a CPR course was when I was in high school. Are you ready to do that? I don't know if I am. We'll discuss as well. It is also Grilled Cheese Day. It is also a day we're going to talk about the craziest way your mom woke you up for anything. There's a mom in Phoenix who's got an interesting technique. And if you are wondering today whether or not you're a good parent, you're going to hear this story, and you're probably going to feel better about yourself. Let's start here this morning with an amazing article from Chatelaine. Sarah Bosfeld is the senior writer at Chatelaine, and what an enlightening, eye-opening piece she has written entitled "Being a Teen Girl on Social Media is Like Having a High-Pressure, Full-Time, Unpaid Job." Sarah Bosfeld joins us this morning. Thank you, Sarah, for coming on and taking the time.
Oh, thanks for having me as always. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm great. Good. I have three boys. And so as I read your article, I really thought I understood what being a teenage girl was like. But again, I guess it's been a long time and since I was one. And also we didn't have that, pressure, that online presence pressure.
Mm-hmm. And your boys have it too.
And
it's just a different degree, you can't really separate experiences by gender per se, but we focus on girls being shadowing, but yeah, it's totally a thing for boys too.
Well, but here's the difference in what I know. Well, two things I want to mention to you, because now I have 2 8-year-olds and an almost 13-year-old, but I find that my girlfriends that have girls, their girls seem to be interested in being on Facebook or Instagram or something at an earlier, because my almost 13-year-old does not care. And he loves his iPad and he's a techie kind of kid, but he doesn't have any interest. So whereas my girlfriends that have girls are having conversations about why you can't have a Facebook account, we haven't got there yet.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that has to do with kind of like how we're socialized to want to put ourselves, our best face out there. I think girls get a lot of that pressure, being having yourself be kind of the product, as it were, by which I mean, people are responding to, we like to be liked, we like to please, we like to, look good, we get all those messages. And I think like it's quite conducive to all of that, these platforms, because you get a lot of validation. It's very social, which girls are super invested in.
Mm-hmm.
I know I was as a teen, you're always thinking about your place and kind of the social milieu. And, I think for teen boys, and some of the researchers I talked to said the difference too is like guys are playing a lot more games online.
Yep.
And like they just care a lot more about that. And they don't really get that same amount of pressure to perform, as it were, socially. I think it exists, but it's ratcheted up, I think, for teen girls.
Yeah, and that root cause is everything. The bombardment of messages and, North American beauty standards. And like you say, that kind of hierarchy it's so precarious and that you kind of have to create for yourself as a teenager. I just wanted to mention, and gosh, I wish I had done better research, but I read an article not so long ago that talked about how my generation of parent, in this age group, we really struggle with this because we're the last generation that will remember what life was like pre everybody had a cell phone, everybody had a Facebook account, everybody had Twitter. And then, we're kind of in that middle area. Like by the next generation, they'll have had phones and social media and internet around them in their entire lives, but we're struggling because we remember what it was like to go out and play and not have a cell phone and do it all day long. So that's the weird struggle that we're having parenting these kids who are completely wrapped up in technology.
Yeah, there's two really tricky things there. Like when I was reporting this, I'm 30, so I don't have kids yet, but I thought a lot about like, okay, what are the similarities here? I had a digital camera. Me and my sisters had digital camera when we were teens. We would take pictures of ourselves, but it didn't go anywhere, right? Like we didn't post them anywhere for the public to see, And I think I tried to really keep in touch with what are the very similar things from our generations. And, even prior to that, you really did care about, your social place and putting things out there. But I think when it's filtered through a phone and, these companies are all in the mix and, you in real time get validation or invalidation, I think that can be a really frustrating thing. And the second part being that we really don't know down the road, like big picture, longitudinal study wise, like what this impact will have on, the developing brains of young people. I think there is a lot of good evidence to show that the neural pathways change. And my piece talks a little bit about how, the front of the brain that, is involved in critical thinking and, really good social skills that is not developed when you're a teenager. And so it's really important to have in-person interaction to facilitate that and to have some moments where you're thinking slowly and you're absorbing things and you're just not being distracted all the time. And I think a lot of us adults now with smartphones can relate to that struggle. But then on the other side of it, it's, maybe down the road there are some benefits to this. And I think I've had a lot of people say this piece is terrifying, throw the phones away, lock your daughters up in a tower. And it's like, I don't know if that's the solution. This is the reality. Mm-hmm. But I think just a bit more understanding and nuance about sort of the investment that's required here might spark a few more conversations between parents and their teens about sort of how does this make you feel? You know, do you find that you're anxious? Like, do you find that this is a lot of pressure? Let's like talk about ways to kind of manage that for your own well-being in a way that they're going to feel empowered and they're going to, you know, feel a little bit better. Like one of these girls I talked to ended up having like a social media cleanse and she felt okay about that. She's had social pressure, people saying, hey, are we not friends anymore? Are we not good? Because like she's not active on social media and they see that she's unfriended them or whatever because she's taken her account down. She's like, you know, so she has to manage that. But that's interesting too, because I think another piece of this is like if you are facing tension or any conflict in your life, when you don't have that fully developed brain, you're going to feel unsafe. And I think we hear that language a lot more now, you know, that it makes me feel emotionally unsafe. And that's a little concerning too. You know, you out in the real world, you're going to deal with conflict. You're going to have people you don't agree with. So you need to have those tools developed to make sure you're equipped to deal with that in a mature, responsible, professional way. And so I think all of those conversations are really good ones for parents to have with their teens. So I think it doesn't have to be all bad and terrifying and scary. And it is so different, but like we also, you know, I think our parents, you know, how different was it back then too? You know, yeah, they didn't have phones, but you know, their parents are probably like, this television set is really,
well, that's
destroy.
It. That's, you know, exactly. So. It. I mean, I think to myself sometimes on, and in my house, I struggle with how much time they're spending playing video games and on tablets. And I think to myself, okay, my kids wake up at 7:30 on a Saturday, they grab the tablet, they play the games for a couple hours. And then I'm like, oh gosh, I should get up because I feel good. Well, I got up at 7 o'clock when I was a kid to watch the Smurfs and watch cartoons until somebody booted me off the television. So, I mean, it's the evolution of a screen, I suppose.
Yeah, but I think, like, at the same time, being, like, really honest about, you know, am I equipping my kid with sort of everything they need to be, like, a fully, you know, in touch with themselves human? Because I think a lot of this filtering through the phone and searching for validation from other people, you know, we did that in without our phones, right? We searched for validation in ways that were maybe not unhealthy, but like you do learn from that. And I think like facilitating those conversations and having parents maybe just better understand how this world works. That was a huge goal of my piece. Like just kind of pull the curtain back and at least you're aware of some of this pressure. You can just have your antenna up a little bit so you're better in touch with your teen who probably would rather die than let you look through their phone, you know? So, and that's not going to make for a healthy relationship between you and your teen too, because they need to have boundaries that they need to learn to set and some privacy, but you know, it's all different, but the same. But this entire moment we're in about the sort of rise of the smartphone, the rise of social media is quite unprecedented as in terms of technology and advancement. And so there are a lot of question marks, but I think it's better to feel empowered reading a piece like this rather than be terrified and like throw the phone away.
Well, I learned.
Take it somewhere positive.
I've learned so much. Sarah Bosfeld is our guest, senior writer from Chatelaine. And I learned so much. I mean, there were parts like you mentioned I related to. Okay, well, you know, they're waiting for someone, a boyfriend, to text them back. One of the girls said, I don't go to sleep because I'm waiting for them to reply. Well, we did that too. We just waited for the phone on the wall to ring. And you mentioned that in your piece. But you also, I mean, I didn't know that there was like this, for example, on Instagram, there's this like crazy, complex way that you, first of all, most of them have a few different accounts and then who gets tagged where is a thing and that it's like, it's really kind of a science.
Yeah, there's a lot to read into. There's a whole language. Like we thought emojis were a language and they are, you know, but in terms of an etiquette and a way that you're expected to sort of behave. So, you know, these girls I talked to, if they posted a selfie, say, they would tag their very close friends on their body. And those friends were, of course, expected to like it and comment. And then, you know, you tag over to the side, other friends of yours who are maybe not as close, and then, you know, but they would have the same expectation. And then on the other side, it would be kind of a pile of tags of people that you know to be your audience, as it were. And so these are not necessarily even people you know that well, even in real life. So it depends on, you know, your privacy settings, of course. But this was this account that they had showed me was, and you mentioned many accounts, a lot of the girls have like one main account that is like quite highly curated and huge audience to follower ratio, meaning they just have a lot more people who can access that. So, you know, again, you could talk to your teen about privacy settings, but that was interesting to me because that's such a brand experiment, right? They're experimenting with who they are as a brand more than just like who they are as like a real person, because they have other accounts for those, right? They have a friend account. They have an account just for family. They have an account where they can just kind of dump stuff that they feel sort of self-expression. And then they also have one, you know, that is kind of for creeping exes and, you know, ex-friends and ex-boyfriends, which is so interesting.
It is.
That's another one, you know, where you read into the etiquette and sort of the people kind of can, they can be fairly transparent sometimes.
Yeah.
But you cultivate those skills that way. It's weird.
Yeah, and because again, it's all very kind of mirroring of the same things we did, where you could measure your friends by who met you at your locker and who, you know, there was all, it was just a different measuring system. So I love about the article that you kind of make comparisons about, you know, how, I mean, of course, this is a whole new world and things change, but the way that we are interacting and the goals, of course, are the same. Am I accepted? Do you see me? Do you hear me? And that kind of stuff. I remember those exact emotions coursing through as I was a teenager. So, I mean, you can find many similarities. It's just kind of that the medium is different.
Yeah. And I think, though, that when you see all this stuff play out in real time, there is more of a risk for higher anxiety for these young people. And so I think there needs to be a lot of real important thinking about, you know, mental health supports, but also not coddling, as it were, you know, like thinking about how to empower kids so that they can take care of their mental health, giving them the tools to, you know when to when to shut the phone off, to put it away, which is very hard given that these social media tools are designed to be addictive, you know, legitimately modeled after slot machines, you know, casinos.
So fascinating. That's fascinating. It was that former Facebook employee who said that they're absolutely modeled to stimulate your brain like casino games.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So scary.
It
when you
is
think about
scary,
a kid, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sarah Bosfeld, it is such a good piece, and I just want every mom and dad in the world to read it. I'll tweet that out at JenCampbell77. It's so great to talk to you again, as always. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Okay, bye
bye.
Oh gosh, it's a lot, though, isn't it? It's a lot. You can read that article. Again, I'll tweet that out for you in just a couple minutes. We're coming back with Jersey Day. Everybody, today is a Humboldt Bronco. This is 570 News.
Don't look at your phone. Just listen to us.
Monitoring every traffic source for your safest, fastest traffic solutions. Your traffic team is 570 News. Kitchener's breaking news, traffic, and weather station.
Good to see so many people around our office this morning wearing their hockey jerseys as we have Jersey Day in support of the Humboldt Broncos and everything this country has been through over the past week. I mean, it's been an unbelievable thing to watch, from the pure amount of tragedy into the support and the movements and the monies raised. It's been a remarkable, and it's week. We're not even that a week yet. Producer James Sebastian Scott joins us because he is ready to talk hockey. And I actually was thinking about this last night while I was, first of all, we'll do some playoff stuff. I was watching your Winnipeg Jets, which actually aren't you're from Manitoba. So a little piece of you.
They are, but they aren't.
Yes, because you're a Leafs fan.
I am, yeah.
And I was watching that game last night. I just really feel like Winnipeg is, those fans are the epitome of how people should behave at a hockey game. They were unbelievable last night.
Winnipeg really loves their hockey. If last night didn't show, look back to the late 80s, early 90s, the WHA, Winnipeg Jets, before they were in the NHL, that city is hockey crazy. And the reason why it's hockey crazy is because there's two things to do out there. You're either in music or you're in hockey or you're not doing anything.
That's right.
Because there's nothing to do.
Uh-huh.
So
you can do both those things when it's freezing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. My hometown showed up last night. Mm-hmm. They were proud of their Jets for winning. I watched that game as well. And I have a soft spot for the Winnipeg Jets, for sure.
Every time that that puck went down the ice. It got iced, like, because they pulled the goalie with 2.5 minutes
right.
left.
Yeah.
The Wild did. And I couldn't believe how many times the puck got iced and didn't go into the empty net,
yeah.
which was what we wanted to happen, obviously.
And one of the broadcasters made an interesting point that back in the 80s and 90s that, you know, your coach didn't want you to ice the puck and try and score on that goal. You wanted to chip it out and try and, you know, get it out of the zone without icing it because you didn't want to be tired for the faceoff. Now you've seen sort of a switch in thinking when it comes to hockey players where you just need to get it out of the zone so you don't yep. get scored on kind of thing. So, I think there was maybe 7 or 8 different times that the Jets iced the puck and you could see on the coach's Paul Maurice's face that maybe he didn't want to ice it that many uh-huh. times, but he definitely trusts his centerman to win the faceoffs for sure.
Sidney Crosby hitting the puck out of midair right into the net.
Yeah.
That was crazy good too.
Probably the 7th time he's done that this year, and if you asked him, he'd probably say it's not on purpose. He just kind of,
yeah.
That's how slow the game is to him. But those elite players, I mean, you just see what they can do on the ice and you're like, oh my, I didn't even think that could happen.
Unbelievable.
And it happens. I think the Blue Jays need to look into getting him into the lineup.
They do. And what I thought was nice, and I know it's an unwritten rule in hockey, but I thought it was quite, it was very classy as, you know, again, those goals got stacked up last night against Philadelphia that, you know, I don't know what the point of cutoff is, but you know, after that 4-5, 6-0, there wasn't a lot of celebrating. There was just, I mean, they had to win the game. They got to score goals. It's the playoffs. But Sidney is really good at just even the way he waits. Is this normal? And I've never noticed this before. Does Sidney Crosby or do all captains wait for their entire team to get back in after a game's over before they go into the dressing room?
That's typical of a hockey team.
Is it? Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I just thought it was classy that he was just really mellow about it, you know, after because you got a hat trick and you're hitting them out of the air.
Right.
You know,
here's the thing. Every time that I've been on a team and I've scored a goal or I don't hot dog is all I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
And because if you hot dog, that'll come and bite you in the butt,
right.
basically.
Yeah.
So that's thinking of hockey players, I think, is that, you know, you could stack up a game 8-0, but that's game one. So game two,
sure.
you have to come back and it's 0-0 and everything's on the even playing field. And if you hot dog the game before, you're definitely going to pay for that in the next game.
Just quickly before we get out to news at 9:30, how unbelievable is it to watch that GoFundMe account, now one of the most successful GoFundMe accounts of all time, quickly getting, you know, into the $9 million mark and of the Saskatchewan Hockey League talking about how the playoffs are going. We're going to keep playing. And that's why you and I are. We're just celebrating some of the moments we saw last night in playoff hockey before the Leafs hit the ice tonight.
That's right.
Against Boston. But I just think it's such a spirit of good momentum. You know, the money's raised and the fact that even the Saskatchewan Hockey League says, nope, we're going to keep playing.
I think that's the right decision. I think you need at the end of the day, you know, there has to be a champion, but we all know that the Humboldt Broncos are going to be the eventual champions of that league.
Yep.
Forever and always. Everyone's going to think of the SJHL now and think of the Humboldt Broncos. And I think it's appropriate to continue. And I think that's the way to move on for not only the league, but also the Broncos community as well.
It's been an amazing week here in Canada and in the hockey world, and it is Jersey Day. That's why you see so many people wearing jerseys in tribute to the Humboldt Broncos today. We are all Broncos. It is 9:30. We're off to the newsroom next on 570 News.
Now you can listen to 570 News on your Sonos speakers or any Google Chromecast enabled device like Google Home or nearby TV with the free Radio Player Canada app.
In the car, tune in using Radio Player on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Radio Player Canada. It's where Canadian radio plays.
Andrew sending me pictures of his entire workplace wearing jerseys today. But Andrew, you forgot to tell me where you work. I was going to give you shout outs. It's lovely to see all of these pictures coming in on Twitter this morning from all over Kitchener and Waterloo and surrounding areas of everybody wearing jerseys for Humboldt today. So last night when we were discussing this, I said to Scotty, gosh, I need a jersey, but I may, listen, again, I've talked about it a million times. I am a Toronto Leafs, Maple Leafs fan. I have been all my life just by default because my father is one and because Scotty is one and every guy I ever dated in high school was one. So, I mean, I just was like, that's what where I got sucked into. And also my brother was a Montreal Canadiens fan to the point where, he made my mother paint the Habs logo on his bedroom wall, which just, you know, did not please my father. He hit it well, but I do recall seeing my father walk by my brother's bedroom and then shut the door a few times just so he didn't have to look at it. So anyway, I said to Scotty last night, though, I don't think I can, because I like to tease the Maple Leafs. I like to make fun of them a lot, you know, because... Well, they're the Maple Leafs. And of course I'm rooting for them tonight. And I love the city of Toronto so much. It's my part-time home. We have a condo in Toronto and a house here in Kitchener-Waterloo because we're two city family. Anyway, I said to him, I know you, do you have a Rangers jersey? I know you do. Which was great because it meant, you know, I think this is a New York Rangers jersey that I got from Scotty. And I don't know why he has one because he's a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. Anyway, I just thought it was more authentic, you know, because you guys would have called me out, and rightfully so. You would have said, you tell a lot of Maple Leafs jokes. You make fun of Leafs fans a lot, even though you pretend to be one. And anyway, on the bandwagon, wearing the Rangers jersey too for our Kitchener Rangers tonight. So thanks for sending me all those pics this morning. Okay, so we gotta have some fun. We do like to have some fun. Polly, are you ready? Coming up, we are going to... Did your mom have any weird ways she got you out of bed in the morning? Were you good at just waking up?
I just woke up on my own most mornings, yeah.
You were like, we talked about this yesterday, you were just a dream child. You were, like, you didn't cause them any trouble, you were just, you'd get up. I bet you if I called your mother right now, you were one of those annoying babies who slept through the night at like 2 weeks old, too. I'm calling your mom later. I'm going to find out. Polly was the perfect child. Anyway, a mom in Phoenix in big trouble for the way she got her child out of bed in the morning. We're going to discuss that. And guess what else, Polly? Today is grilled cheese day.
I like it.
I have two grilled cheese hacks that just might change your life. Grilled cheese is so trendy right now, isn't it?
It's been trendy with me for the last 30 years, so I don't know what you're talking about. I set the trends, baby.
See, another proof that he's the perfect kid. Polly would eat a grilled cheese every day if his mama gave him one. Not complain about it. It's just I'm almost a little happy that it's rainy and gloomy on grilled cheese day. Because what, on a rainy, gloomy day, I want tomato soup and grilled cheese.
Tomato soup. You got to have the tomato soup. I'm right there with you.
I love that. I love that rainy day meal. Anyway, we're going to talk about grilled cheese coming up because fun. We're having some fun later on. But back to the seriosity of the show this morning as we talk about, it's been a couple of years when it comes to talking about the opioid crisis here locally in Ontario, across Canada, and what appears to be across the world. The Ontario government making a controversial change in the fight against opioid overdoses by asking bystanders to give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to victims. This is a CBC report, and joining us to discuss it this morning is Pierre Poirier, who's the Executive Director of the Paramedic Association of Canada. Pierre, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Jennifer.
I have to tell you, before we get into the interview, my producer, producer Polly, our technical producer, noticed that every single letter of your name is on the top row of the keyboard, which I'm sure is not a surprise to you, but he thought that was kind of neat.
I had never noticed that.
Is that right? Well, now you won't unsee it now. Okay, so when we talk about this opioid crisis, I mean, are we kind of just getting so much information so quickly as bystanders or as people who do not use opioids into what we do to help, that it's overwhelming us? Because we know that at first when we started talking about, am I saying it right? Is it called naloxone?
That's correct.
Yes. So when we started talking about that, people were a little alarmed that the advice was for you know, us to have these kits just about everywhere, including schools, even in cars, that this was how big this crisis was, that we as bystanders could go get these kits and to keep them on hand. So as the evolution of what to do in a situation like this happens, are we getting overwhelmed as kind of, you know, bystanders or people who want to help? It just seems like a lot of expectation right now.
I don't think we're being overwhelmed. Honestly, I do believe it is a crisis, and it's a crisis in society that is across society, and it touches on people who may be of less affluence, but also right into the community of people who are very much more affluent. And not putting the value on an individual life, but it is a societal problem. And that's why I think that across the country, jurisdictions and provinces have taken this quite seriously, including the provincial and federal governments.
So as the executive director of the Paramedic Association of Canada, obviously first responders have, you know, special training and an understanding of what to do in these situations. And now you were recommending that, of course, this is something that we would ask people to do, not just first responders, but anybody who was nearby when an overdose was happening, giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to victims. So first of all, why did you guys recommend that? And then we'll talk about why the controversy, why others say it's not something that people should do.
Okay. And first, I'd like to thank the government for actually changing their process. And I think they've made a wise choice. The rationale in the simplest version is that the opioid, fentanyl is the most common, has an impact on the ability of the brain to initiate the response to breathe. So in terms of the pharmacology of it, this drug prevents us from actually taking that next breath. So intuitively, the next part of the logic would be that if you provide a breath, you're actually providing the appropriate treatment. So that is the simplest version of the logic, is that providing a breath and breathing for somebody can save a life.
Do we know how many of us, what percentage of the population is prepared to do this, that has the proper training in mouth-to-mouth resuscitation? Are we lacking in that area? Should everybody know how to do mouth-to-mouth?
That's actually a great question. There's been numerous studies that when you do promotion campaigns, that the number of people who are able to do CPR or to provide those kinds of interventions go up, but over time it kind of slides back down, and the number is not very high in terms of the number of people, in terms of the percentage of the population. The important piece to note, though, with respect to opioids, is that for the most part, people who are picking up the kit oftentimes are part of that community of drug use or drug abuse.
Right.
And therefore, there's an appreciation that if I'm willing to load up an injectable needle and stab somebody with them, mm-hmm. maybe I'm also willing to understand how to position an airway and provide a life-saving breath using a barrier device. So the logic to me is very simple.
Mm-hmm. And we should mention then, obviously, that they're called rescue breathing barriers, and that they will be now included in all of those publicly funded naloxone kits. Those will come as you pick them up.
That is correct.
So then who disagrees then with, I mean, this is, it sounds like science. It sounds like something that is, you know, I mean, it is black and white. That who is disagreeing with the technique? Who's disagreeing with, and with the implementation of these masks and of the suggestion that we should do mouth to mouth?
I'd say there's different members within the medical community that disagree with this process. And it's actually a very interesting topic. Maybe it's just me being fascinated by it. The issue is that years ago, and I think around 2010, there was a change in the way CPR was done from ABCs, if you remember that, mm-hmm. where airway breathing circulation, to compressions as the first thing in CPR, and doing compressions, recognizing that it was a very effective way of resuscitating an individual. That specifically is an excellent treatment for, and I use the example of my mother. If she was unconscious lying on the floor, she's 91 years old, I would start compressions, absolutely. If it was somebody that I knew when I was in the drug community or the fentanyl community, I would give rescue breathing. The change happened in 2010, partly because compressions were very effective, but also because there was a natural, or I'd say natural, but there's almost like a public hesitation of putting my lips on someone else's lips to provide that breath to save a life. And that was part of the change. And that's what we're dealing with today, is that the medical community, members of the medical community, still believe that compression should be the most appropriate treatment anytime you find somebody who's unresponsive. And the paramedic community disagrees with that perspective.
So what you're saying is chest compressions are for someone who's perhaps of a certain age and probably from having like some sort of cardiac issue.
That's correct.
Okay, yeah.
The model of CPR was built upon the, and forgive me for saying it this way, but the 50-year-old male who
right.
was probably obese, who ate a poor diet. And that was the concept of that individual oftentimes had a cardiac arrest. And if the problem is cardiac, absolutely mm-hmm. The first treatment is compressions. But if the problem, and specifically oftentimes we know, is somebody looks like they've overdosed, they may have the pinpoint pupils, and you may actually feel a pulse on them, the treatment is rescue breathing and naloxone.
And like you just told us, because that the brain is not sending the message to for the body to take the breath and the kind of the tongue being a barrier in the back of the throat.
That's correct. Like somebody lying flat on their back, oftentimes the tongue actually blocks the airway so that there is no passage of air.
We are speaking to the Paramedic Association of Canada's Executive Director, Pierre Poirier, who pushed for this change through his work on Ontario's Opioid Emergency Task Force. Okay, so if we're in a situation where we come across someone who we think is experiencing an opioid overdose, can you kind of walk us through, and I know that, of course, it'd be much better if we all had specific training, but I do know that regular folk in emergency situations, we kind of never know how we're going to react. So my hope is that somebody who's listening to this right now is going to hear your voice cut through with those, you know, very kind of clear first steps, and that they'll retain it in case it ever needs to be retained.
So first to start, you know, the nuance between my mother's scenario, a 90-year-old female who is unconscious, or a 90-year-old male, and the fact that I'd recognize somebody who may be in the drug community. And the starting is probably, for both scenarios, the same, is this shake and shout to see if the person is responsive and not just sleeping. And that's an important piece right off the bat. The next piece is to call 911 to get help on the way. And then after that, in Ontario, they're saying to give naloxone and then to provide rescue breathing. And then after that, you reassess the individual and then maybe provide naloxone again. So that is kind of the basic instruction within Ontario on how to address the situation.
What would happen if you gave naloxone and it wasn't needed? Are there any kind of detrimental effects that can happen if it's administered and that person actually was not suffering from an overdose?
No, there isn't. Naloxone is actually a fairly safe drug. And if it's given when it wasn't required or there was no opioid in that individual, it would not have an effect.
Which I think
it's a very safe drug.
Yeah, and I think that's important to mention too, because people, you know, again, you get nervous. Oh my gosh, what if I make it worse? What if am I doing the right thing? You know, you're kind of overwhelmed in that situation. So I think that's important to know.
The one piece there is that to recognize that to give naloxone is excellent, but stay with the individual, provide the rescue breathing, and make sure 911 is called until that individual wakes up.
Pierre Poirier, it's a fascinating conversation, and it's a horrifying a problem. Are we getting somewhere? Do you feel hopeful about the situation?
I'm hopeful. I think that governments across the country have made excellent choices and implemented numerous changes, you know, from legislation to practice to these naloxone kits. They've done excellent work on that. I am hopeful that the situation will get better, though I'm not seeing a lot of evidence at this time. Mm. If anything, maybe the overall treatments that are being provided and the education that's providing is reducing the number of deaths, but opioids in our society is still a significant problem.
Fascinating conversation with you, sir. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity, Jennifer.
Thank you. Take good care. Bye-bye. It's scary, right? I mean, if in that situation, what do you do? But great, clear steps from Mr. Poirier, who just, gosh, you can really sense that he has, he's got a first responder's kind of tone to him, doesn't he? He's got this kind of internal calmness that really shines through. It is 9:50. A mom in Phoenix tries to get her child up in a very unconventional way. Why did the child need to get up? Where was he going? How did she wake him up? If you at all have questioned today whether or not you're a good mom or a good dad, wait for this one next on 570 News.
Your home for the Toronto Maple Leafs is 570 News.
I mean, I hope we get to talk about Grilled Cheese Day, but if we don't get to talk about Grilled Cheese Day, what more is there to say? It's Grilled Cheese Day. Eat it. This is my best tip for grilled cheese. Turkey, avocado, Gouda. So fancy. This story just... Well, I don't even know if I should be laughing. I don't know. It's a delicate dance about whether you should laugh at people's misfortune or not these days. I'm not actually sure. But this mom in Phoenix arrested because she says her 17-year-old would not get out of bed for church on Easter Sunday. She tried everything. She tried everything she knew what to do. And she finally tasered him. Is it tased or tasered? She tasered the child, the 17-year-old, in the leg. And I don't actually know if she said this or not, but I kind of wish that she, I want her to have said, because it's Easter Sunday, kid won't get up for church. I want her to have said, get up for Jesus because he got up for you. I'm totally going to laugh at my own joke there. So I asked her on the radio station this morning, did your mom wake you up in a weird way? Did your mom ever wake you up in a strange way? And we have some great answers. Glenn Pelche has one, but we'll go to the phones first at Sarah 570. Hi, Candace. Did your mom have a way to get you up for school in the morning? How'd your mom get you out of bed?
Oh, it was actually my grandmother, and she would let out the ferret so it would bite us to wake us up.
Ferret?
Yeah.
Oh my God. They just like literally wake up with like a creature in your bed.
Yep. She would throw it in the bedroom and it would crawl in the blankets and bite us, me and my sister, and wake us up.
And up you'd get, I suppose. It worked, right?
Oh, yeah.
It worked.
Oh, yeah.
How did your mom, thanks, Candace, how'd your mom, what crazy way did your mom wake you up in the morning? My mom used to sing to me. She would go, Jennifer, it's time to get up, which would drive me bonkers when I was a teenager, but what I wouldn't give now to hear her do that. And sometimes I would want her to stop so much that I would pretend to get up. I would take, I would go into the bathroom to pretend I was going in the shower. I'd make a pillow on the bathroom floor from towels and I'd go back to sleep, turn the water on like I was in the shower, but I wasn't. I was just trying to get away from my mother singing. Brenda, Star 570, what crazy way did your mom wake you up in the morning?
Hi there.
Hi.
My mom, one time my younger brother wouldn't get up, and so she went into his room, picked him out of the bed, and put him in the snow out on the front porch.
Oh, that's a rude
way. And that woke him up all right.
Your mom is strong. I love it. Thanks, Brenda. Glenn Pelche was laughing about it too. When I walked through the newsroom, he sent an email. He said, when I was in high school, my mom would throw cold water on my face in the bed if I didn't get up in time. And Glenn said his mom had to get up for work. She didn't have time for his crap. She had to get up. So cold water on the face. And like the mom in me is like, oh, but then you have a wet bed. But then and then I realized, well, you know, if everybody's gone for the day, that'll dry out by bedtime again, you know? Right now, I'm at the stage with my children where it's like, let them sleep. If they're asleep, I'm not waking them up. No, I'm not. Crazy ways your mom woke you up in the morning. Oh, this is from Hank. Hank says, my mom had a habit of walking in the bedroom, asking us to get up once. If you didn't get up after that, the next time she came in the bedroom, every strip of covers and sheets was getting yanked from your body, which would have been cold because we had a wood stove heating the home. So in the morning, it's a little frosty. Well, you know what, you guys? See, that's what I'm saying. At least nobody got tasered. Nobody got hurt. Get up for Jesus because he got up for you. Well, because Polly, he wouldn't get up for church, you see, on Easter Sunday. Get up for G. Do you see what I'm saying? She didn't actually say, I made that part up, but it's my best joke of the day so far. Enjoy the rest of your Jersey day. Thank you for the phone calls and the emails. And of course, all the fun. I'm going to go get some, maybe I'll make some grilled cheeses today. Grilled cheeses. Whatever. Enjoy Mr. Farwell. He's on the way next on 570 News.